Pie in the Sky Media. This series contains adult language and descriptions of graphic violence throughout. Listener discretion is advised.
3, 2, 1. Hello and welcome back, Nation. This is the first new episode of Criminal Mischief. My name is Brandon Morgan. I produce the show for the great Carolyn Osorio, still in her Halloween colors. Would that be, don't tell me, is that like a dark umber or a burnt pumpkin? What color is that?
Like a burnt pumpkin.
It's nice.
Yeah, this is one of my fall jams.
It's almost like the Reese's color.
It looks like both of us are still living in Halloween past.
Oh, yeah. I'm eating my kids' Halloween candy. I'm eating it. My question is, why aren't you eating your kids' Halloween candy?
You know what? Because I'm actually being good. And, it's such a... I can see you had the Reese's... What's your favorite? What's your absolute favorite?
I don't know. I eat all of it. And I have some Junior Mints that I'm going to get into in a second.
I'm talking about when you were a kid. Like, what was your favorite? Like, didn't you trade with your brother?
I had a very strange favorite candy growing up.
Gosh, if you say Twizzlers, I'm gonna just go over there and like...
Twizzlers was number two, but my number
one... What?
Yeah, Twizzlers are delicious, first of all.
Of course. I knew you were gonna say Twizzlers.
No, my number one, I don't think you'd ever get, very specific. I just couldn't get enough of watermelon-flavored Jolly Ranchers.
You know what? I felt the same way about pineapple Jolly Ranchers, but they're really rare. They're rare.
Pineapples, I'm not aware of that they even existed.
Yeah. Right. It's like the color of it is like a brownish yellow, and it's so delicious. But yeah, I feel you on that. But my favorite was the Snicker. And then my sister and I, she liked the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup, and then nobody liked the Three Musketeers. So they were like,
Three Musketeers are weird. They're like, the candy makes me tired. I don't know why, but this does. It tastes tired. But it's I was never into like the chocolate bars, like the Kit Kats or the 100 Grands or the Milky Ways or anything like that. Like, I'll have one. I'll enjoy a Kit Kat every now and then, okay? But I don't like, I'm not about like the chocolate candies, right? Like,
but I'm all about it. So these are fighting words.
No,
these
I'm more of like a gummy. I'm a gummy person a lot.
What do you think of chocolate covered gummies? What's your take on that?
Nope.
What's your hot take?
Nope. I think it's a bastardization of a perfect candy, and you can't just put chocolate on something and instantly it's better. No, that's
a lot of people do and they like it.
No, it's a fallacy.
Oh no, you know what my son loves is the freeze dried. Have you tried that? Where it's like freeze dried, and so it's like the gummies are, or like that kind of candy is freeze dried, and then it kind of tastes like space candy, but it's like he loves it.
You should get him into therapy. But,
you've never even tried it before. How can you say you don't like it?
Come you don't on. Need to improve on something like a Haribo gummy bear. You don't have to. It's perfect.
Okay. You don't
need to improve on Swedish fish. You don't need to improve on Sour Patch Kids.
This is funny because a lot of people don't like Swedish fish, but I actually really like Swedish fish.
They're delicious.
Fish.
They're delicious.
Right. Okay. All right.
So are Twizzlers.
There's something wrong with you.
No. Twizzlers are a perfect candy. They're delicious.
But why?
I'm not hating on Red Vines, you know, in terms of the mass market, like licorice wars. Okay. I'll enjoy a box of Red Vines at a movie in Los Angeles because California, West Coast is Red Vines, East Coast is Twizzlers. I didn't know what Red Vines were until I moved West.
I didn't know that Twizzlers were an East Coast thing.
Oh yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, so you would actually have had to grow up eating Twizzlers to appreciate a Twizzler, because I grew up eating Red Vines. So like when I
they didn't exist. They didn't exist.
I was like, what is this? This is disgusting.
It's just how it was. Listen, where I grew up in North Jersey, things I didn't know about that like existed until I moved. And this was the 90s, so it was a while ago, but like I didn't know about Red Vines. I'd never had Mexican food. And I never had sushi. Like those, there are probably a few other things, but those were the first three real big ones. Sushi I still don't do, but now, I mean, living in Southern California, I'm within 5 blocks of 7 like awesome Mexican restaurants that I eat at all the time. You know, I cook Mexican food now. It's really, it's become a staple of my diet. But until then, no.
Man, yeah, you were missing out.
Strange. Yeah, really strange. Speaking of New Jersey, you decided to kick off Criminal Mischief with a banger.
Okay. Right? Well, this was your recommendation.
I didn't need to know that the phrase family annihilator existed within the FBI lexicon. I didn't need to know that.
Really? You'd never heard of that before?
I'd never heard that it happened so frequently that there was a term for it within the FBI, a family annihilator.
Yeah. Yeah. These guys who, you know, it's like that Watts guy, you know, I mean, that
it's a very dramatic term. Yeah. It's very dramatic. Well, it's a very dramatic act. So I guess it requires a dramatic term.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So what did you think? Did you have heard of the case before?
I had not. I came across it just kind of tangentially when I was, researching something else, the DB Cooper connection for a different show that I had done. I did a podcast called X Marks the Spot. And the man, Forrest Fenn, who was responsible for hiding, he would have admonished me right there. I never said buried, for hiding a $2 million treasure in the Rocky Mountains. There was rampant speculation that he was actually DB Cooper. So I did a deep dive into the whole DB Cooper situation, which is a really fascinating story. And this guy's name came up because the timing matched like perfectly. Now look, the timing for Forrest Fenn also matched really perfectly in terms of how did he have the money to do what he did on a like Air Force retiree's salary with, you know, a wife and four kids. Okay.
Well, wasn't he an art dealer?
Yeah, but where did he get his seed money to become an art dealer? Because he showed up in Santa Fe, New Mexico and bought like a huge art gallery and had all of the seed money to start his collection. And he had enough money to basically, it's like he had fuck you money because he was able to do whatever he wanted within a very strict and regimented and not easy to break into art world in Santa Fe. But he did it. And so everyone was like, where did he get the money? Where did he get the money? And so many things lined up, right? Like his aviation experience, he was a pilot, fighter pilot in Vietnam. He had parachuted out of airplanes before solo. He had survival skills. He had vast knowledge of different types of aircraft. And the aircraft that DB Cooper hijacked was the only commercial aircraft, twin engine jet aircraft at the time that had an aft staircase. Like right at the tail of the plane.
Have you seen that image of that and then him flying off?
Yeah.
Have you seen that like cartoon? It really brings it into perspective of what that would actually be like.
Absolutely.
You know?
So you would imagine that someone with some experience and Forrest Fenn's experience was far more, I mean, incredible than that. He was shot down over Laos and had to like eject and like all that kind of shit. So but anyway,
Was it debunked with Forrest Fenn?
You know, he didn't admit it before he died. And if his family knows, they're not saying anything. But it's one of those enduring, you know, myths in American pop culture where we'll never know.
Right. And that's the same with this guy, with John List. Like right. He said he didn't do it, but there's still people who believe that he did. And it still comes up just because of the timing and, you know, he had nothing to lose and, you know, all of that.
And much more so than Forrest Fenn, the artist's rendering of what DB Cooper looked like, the Wikipedia picture of List in jail when he's an old scraggly man, like that's an older version of the artist sketch of DB Cooper. You know, that's the only thing that made me go, holy shit, that looks a lot like the guy. But then I don't think he has he just doesn't seem like he has the spirit of adventure to do something.
Absolutely not. You know, absolutely. The obsessive compulsive disorder.
Yeah.
I mean, he could not be Mr. Cool Guy like DB Cooper was.
So same question for you. Did you know anything about this case before I mentioned it to you?
I had watched The Watcher, which was a popular show on Netflix that was great. And, so I know that wasn't, you know, it was a kind of an idea based on the John List situation, but I didn't know tons about it, you know? So, and you know, it's hard, you know, it's all the cases to cover are hard, but when a father, you know, annihilates his entire family, you know, it's just the trust and the misplaced trust. I mean, it's just horrendous, you know?
I could sense that. It was weird. I really enjoyed the way that you laid the story out, because you laid it out very clinically, as if you had kind of assumed some of the attributes of this guy's personality, because you laid it out very in a regimented, kind of compartmentalized way. And the only time, and you know, and I get very emotional about this shit when it comes to, you know, kids dying and all that shit. But the only time where I went, oh, fuck, with his son that he had to shoot like 10 times, right? Because everything else was clean. Boom, back of the head. Boom, don't see it coming. Boom, put him in a sleeping bag, arrange them in the room, cover their faces, like all of that shit. But before we get to all that, which we already kind of did, but so he was an accountant. He worked at a bank. Had this huge house in Jersey. Awesome. Great.
What's weird about that house is that, you know, I was surprised that for how regimented he was and how risk averse he seemed, he then like is underwater and like goes crazy and buys this really expensive house that they could not afford. And I guess, you know, they couldn't, I mean, it just seems out of character for him, you know, that's what risk takers do. You know, that's like living above your means. That's not like buttoned up accountants who, you know, count widgets. You know what I mean?
No, and so maybe, maybe he knew that, you know, the Tiffany glass was like an investment piece or something, like who knows, but I agree.
What I found out, and I don't know if this is true, is that if he would have just sold that Tiffany, it was like, so $100,000 back in the day was like $700,000. So that would have wiped out all of his debt. But I think that, you know, keeping up appearances, keeping up with the Joneses was so important to him, was so vital. It was everything to him that he would rather murder his entire family than be ashamed of not being a provider.
It's so weird because what, like if he sold the glass, people in town would know, oh, he sold the glass, he must be broke, you know?
Move, you know, sell the glass, and, you know, and I get having this vision of like wanting to buy, I love diamonds in the rough, like buying some property and like totally redoing it and making it really cool. And, you know, maybe putting too much money into it that you don't have, but then, I mean, it's just kind of like the spirit of the American dream if you can do it. Right. But this just seems out of whack, you know, that it's like almost gross for this three, you know, family with just three kids. And then they've got the mom living upstairs and they have this huge palatial mansion, 18 or 19 rooms and a ballroom. It just doesn't track, but it obviously did, you know?
So he was very ego driven, right?
I think that when you look at things behind the scenes like that and really analyze it, but on the surface, I don't think that it was apparent because he was very mild mannered.
But he was afraid. He didn't tell his wife that he got fired. He was going to the train station every day and reading the paper when he was supposed to be at work. And so it was very strange movie comparison here. But did you ever see The Full Monty? Remember that movie, The Full Monty?
Yes, I do. But I don't remember. I remember liking it, but I don't remember everything about it. Tell me.
First of all, terrific.
Is it like mid-90s or something?
Yeah, this is a terrific, terrific movie. It's about four guys, or five guys, whatever, you know, in a really kind of financially depressed UK. They're going to dance nude, okay, for a one night like all male review to try and sell out this club to make a bunch of money in one night, and so it's all just these kind of misfit ragtag guys. You know, one guy's like a grifter, another guy's an out of work like waiter or whatever, but then the older guy, who's like a professional, you know, like reminded me of List, right? A really buttoned up like accountant, very, very similar to List. He loses his job, which is why he's doing this dance thing. So when he tells his wife he's going to work, he's actually going to rehearsal and he's just trying to get to the show so he can get the money or like get another job. Okay. Mm-hmm. And there's a great scene. There's a great scene where his wife finds out because someone makes a mistake and mentions it to his wife. And he like breaks down and he's so mad at the guy. He's like, she didn't have to know. She didn't have to know that I got fired. I could have taken a loan from the new company. I could have gotten an advance of my first paycheck. And she never, like, he was so scared of his wife finding out that he was a failure, you know? He didn't then go and fucking kill everybody. He's just like, oh, my wife left me and now I have my new friends and I'm going to go dance naked and see what happens. And it was a great movie. But so it reminded me of that.
And then, but I think that's the ultimate vulnerability. I mean, I just showed you my recording equipment and you were making fun of me because the audio was so terrible in this. And I totally apologize to everybody listening.
Wrong. It wasn't, I wouldn't classify it as recording equipment, first of all.
Okay, stop. I know you're going to win and I can't allow you to win. Okay. The point that I'm trying to make is that you need to feel safe when you were telling somebody something, when you're revealing something. And clearly the partner that he was with and the situation that he was in, you know, he did not feel, and I'm not putting this on his family at all. I'm just saying maybe this would have changed had he done the full Monty, had he had friends that he could go and and talk to and share and dance and all that with. And he was just in his own head.
He's responsible for six people, four kids, a syphilis afflicted wife. Right. And his mom up on the third floor. What the fuck is an 85-year-old doing on the third floor? You know what? Because she can't come down the stairs, so they never have to deal with her. That's why you put someone on the third floor. So he was dealing with a lot of shit.
He didn't deal with it well.
Yeah.
You think so? It's interesting because it's like, just sell the house.
But you know, appearances, right? To not just his wife, to his kids, to his mom, to the town, to his everybody. So the other thing that it reminded me of is when I was my first year out of high school, one of my best friends was a year below me in high school. His name's Steve Farrell. Great kid. He lives in Baltimore now. His wife and his son. And so we were really, really good friends. And he was friends with my older brother as well. And so that summer, his parents were like, you have to go get a summer job. He goes, I will. I'm going to go get a job. So we didn't know this. Okay. We didn't know that he promised his parents he was getting a job. He just showed up at our house every morning and he'd have breakfast with us. And then he'd sit in the living room with my brother and they'd play Tetris for like 8 hours. Okay. Because my brother was home from college and just didn't want to do anything.
Oh my gosh, your brother was in college and he was playing Tetris?
Yeah. And then the college didn't last long for my brother. And then after like almost 5 weeks of this, my mom just asked Steve, what's going on? We love you and you're welcome here all the time, but like, don't you want to go do anything for the summer? He goes, oh no, Miss Morgan, my parents think about looking for a job. So I can't go home. I gotta be here. And my mom was like, what the fuck are you talking? You go get a job. He goes, oh, come on. So it's a much more benign version of this, but this kind of like, I'm afraid to tell people the truth. I'm unable to do what is expected of me. So instead I'm going to live a lie to varying degrees.
Well, and that's what's interesting about the bust that was created. And it wasn't just based on looking at other pictures and looking at his parents, but it was also the psychological.
That freaked me out. I made a note about that. I was like, this artist isn't really, what did I write? He's not just an artist. He's, what did I say? I don't even remember. Oh, he's the interesting stuff about the sculptor, really more like a profiler, right? Like that's what affected the sculpture, like the saggingness and the big thick glasses to hide behind. And I'm like, holy shit, this person's he's looking into my soul.
But I mean,
my glasses off. I'm not hiding behind anything. You're hiding.
Well, you've got clear glasses. You're like, look at me. I'm just like,
you can't. I don't want you to see my eyes. See right there. Boom. You can't see what I'm looking at.
The glare. I think it's like, we love that, right? I mean, it's just so like, It was full circle. It happened immediately, like I think 10 days after the show came out, and the glasses were exactly, the glasses that he picked were the exact glasses. Yep. I mean, it's just incredible. And that just shows the power of, you know, it doesn't always solve things, but it really, when it does, it's really satisfying, especially in this case, because this guy thought, hey, you know, yep, if they had not done this, he probably never would have been caught.
A lot of people have just gotten away with shit and changed their identity and moved and lived out their lives and died. And some of them are, you know, some of them decide to, you know, leave these notes or deathbed confessions, you know, and those are very, very interesting stories. But this guy, you know, thankfully he got caught. But I mean, let's talk about how he murdered like an accountant would murder. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very, very well thought out. Cold, calculating. And did you hear the judge? The judge, you know, wants to be a writer. Coldly calculating, cunningly conceive and carry out a cowardly. I mean, all that alliteration, the judge was really happy with when he wrote that opinion. You know that, right? The judge was like, fuck yeah. That was nailed it. Nailed it.
Dismount.
Yeah. Bang. You're welcome, yeah. Jerry.
Yeah.
But so no, but this guy, List, left the lights on, left music playing, turned the AC all the way up to slow the decomp, you know?
I didn't get the lights part. I wondered if that was a mistake.
Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, because that's what I'm saying. That might have been like one, because that was one of the things, like, why would these lights be on?
He probably thought that the light bulbs would last longer than they did. But normally if you see lights on, you're like, oh, someone's home. Everything's cool. And you'd leave the house alone.
Right, but they were all supposed to be on vacation. So it's like...
That's a problem. That's the other thing. He let everybody know, don't worry if you don't see us for a month. So no one even thought about it for a month, you know?
Right, right.
Really, but I'm smart. Just saying... I think he overlooked the lights thing. I think he overlooked it, you know?
Yeah, and then the fact that he murders all of them and then stays the night and sleeps.
Yeah. Well, for a lot of this, reading his letter, the explanation, unfortunately, could be because Jesus, right? Yeah. It was encapsulated really well. You had a line where you, I don't think I wrote it down specifically. All right, there it is. Yep. Since he did what he did, he guaranteed that his family would go to heaven, didn't allow his daughter to become a filthy actress, right? And move to LA and destroy the family name, guaranteed that they would go to heaven. And he knew that he could confess and also go to heaven. So that's the problem, obviously, right there, my major problem, one of many, with Christianity specifically, when you call something a religion that's actually, you know, a cult of human sacrifice, you get these ideas, right? You get the ideas.
I think that in religion, you know, in all across all religions, there's people who pervert, you know, teachings that other people absolutely believe in. And this was a massive perversion for his own purposes.
I don't think it's a perversion. It's scripture. No, it is. You confess your sins, you go to heaven. That's it, period. No matter what it is. If you accept Jesus into your heart before you die, you can do anything that you want, right?
I think there needs to be a clause in there, and maybe there is.
They've been pushing the Vatican for generations, because the Vatican, I think they finally switched course on it, but like children that die before they're baptized, children, blameless, okay? Mm-hmm. They go to purgatory. Mm-hmm. People are like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like actual believers, Catholics who have that horrible tragedy of losing a child before baptism, or before, but it doesn't matter, before baptism, losing a child. And then they're also saddled with the additional burden of knowing that they're not going to be able to see their kid in heaven when they die because they're in purgatory. And the church just turned a blind eye. They go, hey, look, that's what God says. That's what the big dude upstairs says the facts are. So that's how it is. Because according to the scripture, we are born in sin and then commanded to be well, right? So this is a manifestation of that. And but you hear it laid out perfectly because he said it. I killed them, so I know that they went to heaven, and I will confess my sins and I'll see them in heaven when I die. And he was cool with it.
I think he was. And that's why this is so hard, because the idea, I mean, I know right now, Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, believes that he's been saved and proselytizes to the people who write into him and has a whole marketing machine behind that to like bring a flock. And the idea that they think in their minds that they will be saved is just another layer of just, it makes me sick.
Yeah.
You know,
Son of Sam, a fraction of Ridgway's body count, David Berkowitz. Okay. Son of Sam, killed 6, wounded 7, excuse me, in the '70s in New York. You know what his new name is now? He's not the Son of Sam anymore. He's the Son of Hope. And he runs a Christian ministry. Yeah. That he started at fucking Attica, upstate in New York. Okay. And he's like, that's cool. That's what I do now. Because Jesus loves me and I'm going to heaven because I confessed and I know what I did was wrong. Okay. But this is what I'm doing now. And I'm helping these other hardcore criminals find Jesus so they can also wipe their conscience clean and scapegoat it and put it all on Jesus.
Do you think that John List actually believed that? Do you think that, or do you think that he used it for his own purposes, you know, to convince himself? Do you think he actually believed it?
It's a dangerous question to ask me, and because I vacillate a little bit. Do I believe that people have strongly held legitimate religious beliefs? Today I'll say yes, I think so. Yes, I think so. I also think that a lot of people use that as a shield more than as, you know, like a lot of the evangelical Christians, a lot of these people that, you know, that claim to follow Jesus, but then hate immigrants, right? And hate gay people and hate, you know, completely like subverting the teachings of Jesus, which is love thy neighbor as you love yourself, welcome the immigrant as if you bubble, you know, and all. And so it's just the hypocrisy of it is really gross.
Well, and that's why I was talking to Ken Lanning about, like, okay, wait, number one, thou shalt not kill.
Sure.
Like, if you do, you know, that should have stopped everything, right?
From the Old Testament. That's
right,
old,
exactly.
That's Old that's Testament. But then, like, but then here comes the Nazarene, right? Gentle Jesus, meek and mild. Through me, you get to heaven. Come on. If you don't, you burn in everlasting fire for all of eternity. But yes. I love you.
So come scary on. You oh my gosh.
You know, so,
I know.
It's Old Testament where God is a bully and is going to, you know, destroy you, and there are all of these commandments and all the shit you can't do. The New Testament, there's a ripcord. You could say, oh, wait, I could just do this. Oh, and I'm cool now. Great.
Well, what do you think about the letter? What did you think about the letter?
It's like he was leaving instructions, like he was going on vacation and leaving instructions for the person who was house sitting. Like, it was so coldly written, in my opinion. Not to say anything of your performance. Your performance was spot on. I love your acting chops. They're great. But he wrote it, you know, he was, again, finding the soul. It was to a clergy member, right? Explaining, laying out his case to a member of the cloth who would understand it. I'm sure this clergy guy's going, oh, too bad, but he gets in. He gets in. He gets his eternal reward because he knows the rules. You know, and too bad he had to do all this.
But wouldn't that mean that he would have to actually confess it to somebody?
You know what? It depends on which branch of Christianity. I think it's if just Jesus is in your heart, right? If you accept Jesus as your personal Lord and Savior before you die, I don't know if you have to proselytize it or if you have to shout it from the rooftops or if you, you know, the Quakers are like, you know, the Lord dwells within and can be summoned with a whisper. You know, you don't have to like scream it, right? But well, then I mean, I think that's you have the Baptists that are like, you know, the louder the better. So you never know.
I think that's an interesting thought because or thought experiment of, so if he did confess it within his religion, mm-hmm. would the preacher then not be able to tell police, like, here's John List. He's been, you know, I mean, it.
Look, that's a covenant between you and your clergy. You know, it's the same like talking to a doctor, or talking to your lawyer. I think there's the crime fraud exception to all of it. Or if you're going to hurt yourself, or if you tell the priest, I'm going to go kill somebody, or I'm going to kill myself, then yeah, I think they're bound, you know, by you know, contemporary kind of laws mm-hmm. to report that, you know.
Because if he actually believed that, then he should have confessed right away to somebody and then taken his punishment for it and then been able to go to heaven once he, you know, if that was his belief system, you know, he didn't have to, you know, get to live his life.
Sure. Running from it right. lets us know that he knows he did something fucking horrible.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think that he totally full circle, like it was never about the religion. It was what he used it to, you know, do whatever he wanted.
Just lived like a life for almost another 20 years. He got remarried. Colorado's beautiful, right? I mean, he was living in Denver. It's a great city. He found an accounting job, you know, the clear air. Why not?
I mean, girl. I just like, he could have just walked away. You know, we always talk about this and it's like, just walk away.
Yeah. I know you're right. And I missed something and I felt like a moron. So when all of the pictures of himself that he cut out of all the pictures in the house, I was like, what is he doing? Is he going to go make a bunch? Does he need them for like fake IDs? That's where my head went. Cause I had so many fake IDs before I turned 21. Right. You need a picture that looks old or whatever. But did he really have
someone who was like 5'1"? I'm like, here.
This is me.
It worked. No, I don't think I was like that.
Mine never worked. The only one that ever worked for me is I had a roommate that I looked a lot like, and he was 3 years older than me. So I could drink on his ID starting when I was 18. It was great. But no, so he cuts out all those faces from the pictures. Do you think he really had the foresight? He was like, so no one will be able to tell anyone what I look like or show anyone what I look like? Well,
it worked, Brandon. And did you see his picture? I mean, he looked like the most boring, unidentifiable. I can't even think about what he looks like right now from that photo.
You're a cop. Who's the first person you call then? His parents or brothers or sisters or any siblings or any family or friends? I'm like, hey, you got a picture of this guy. Like, did he make sure that all pictures of him were destroyed?
You got to remember, this is before the digital age. So it's
sure, of course. You
know,
but
so, and he seems like the type of person where he probably didn't have a lot of friends. And maybe he was the type of person that when there's a photo, he's like kind of slinking over or he's just not involved.
Yeah. He must have known. You're 100% right because it worked. Right? Like that was obviously something that he thought through and got rid of all of the evidence and it worked because there were no other pictures that they had one. They found one picture of this fucking guy.
Yeah. And he was an only child. And like if his, you know, we don't know, it sounds like his parents were very religious and his mom was very overbearing. And, you know, if they're not the type of parents who took a lot of pictures, you know, I mean, I have no idea. I mean, I'm just saying that clearly he knew that there weren't a lot of pictures out there because why would he take the time to cut them out if he knew, hey, there's probably only like one or two and I'm good to go.
Well, but then if he did everything like an accountant would, including he bought a gun the way an accountant would buy a gun instead of the way a criminal would buy. He should have bought a gun the way a criminal would buy a gun.
Right.
He did it legal and got the permit and got fingerprinted. And that's what wound up fucking him up. Right. Mm-hmm. He could have just hopped over any of the Hudson River crossings and been in the city and bought a gun off the street with no questions asked, like in a second. But he probably didn't know that, you know. Mm-hmm. And he went and he did it the right way. And that's what got him. right? Because the fingerprint.
Right, because I was actually thinking that through, and I'm like, well, didn't they take a bunch of fingerprints at the helm at the house that night? You know, because this is the only one they had was the permit fingerprint. I mean, it just seems like,
gosh, did he wipe everything down?
I mean,
that would be crazy everything down in the house.
What I'm saying, in a 19 room, if it was 19 rooms or 18 rooms plus the ballroom, but.
And his car at Kennedy Airport, right? His car was way out of Kennedy, and did he wipe that down? Because Kennedy Airport's far.
I mean,
like a 2-hour drive to get out to Long Island from New Jersey.
I think that he must have, because they were like showcasing like the fingerprint.
Yeah.
You know? And had he not done that, like, how would they have proven that it was him, you know, if they hadn't, you know what I mean? If they didn't have fingerprints, would that have been reasonable doubt? Like, that's scary to think about.
Absolutely would have, yeah. I mean, because otherwise, think about it the other way. If I'm his defense attorney, okay, in the absence of that fingerprint,
yeah.
You know how much I would just tear into the whole America's Most Wanted sculpture kind of thing? You can make that seem ridiculous in a second. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen it, but the glasses and then the side.
Sure, yeah. And you know, if I'm the defense attorney, I walk in with 10 dudes off the street that look just like that motherfucker with the glasses, with the fucking skinny neck, like all of that. Okay. All right. You could do it. But that's why you need the corroborating evidence, you know?
Is this like another fantasy of you being a defense attorney with karate and
gosh. Karate defense attorney. That's
and like everybody looking at you and just like, oh, he did it again.
That guy knows karate.
And he's a kick-ass attorney.
Yes.
He defends. Man.
And here would be the hook in every episode. Right before the jury comes back, I tell the defense attorney, I'll fight you for it. And they know not to, because I know karate. Trick.
There's a billboard with you like floating on a cloud.
No, there's me doing a front kick. Right?
Okay, yeah. But the Zen part about it is a big deal.
With a briefcase and like in my karate outfit.
Oh my gosh.
I'll fight for you.
Yeah.
It'd be a great show.
Have fun with that.
Be a great show. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it would be interesting to, that would have been interesting to, if they didn't have any other fingerprints. It just really would show his, I mean, I still think he would have been convicted, but, you know, because of the scar and, you know.
Sure. Yeah. There was a lot of other evidence, but, and is there a better idea for, speaking of stupid ideas for television shows, a really great idea? America's Most Wanted? Are you fucking kidding me? Right? Like that shit actually works.
You mean a reboot of that? I think is
no,
is
no, it no. Over? Just the show in general.
Oh, right. I mean, I was totally thinking that too.
How they're born like, from I can such keep... a terrible tragedy. Okay.
Yeah.
The guy loses his son in a horrific, horrific way. And he turns all of that simmering fucking anger into, I'm just going to catch as many of these motherfuckers as I can. And I'm going to have a huge audience on network television every week. And all of these people just sitting on their couch, sipping beer and eating TV dinners are going to go, I know that motherfucker, and call in. And I'm going to be famous for a minute. And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
It worked. Well,
and we know that we're going to be having an announcement pretty soon about a reward and a call-in. So that's kind of a tease that I couldn't resist. But
no, it's true. I didn't even think about it.
When you think about a show like that, and here's the thing, the genius thing about it is that at first, I'm sure the producers were like, it's a really old case because it was the oldest case they'd ever covered.
Yeah.
And we don't have any photos, you know, because they're thinking, okay, how can we stretch this out into an exciting segment, you know? And then somebody's like, right, we're gonna add a sculpture.
A forensic sculpture artist is gonna come in and blow your mind with the glasses and the scar and the loose jowl and all that kind of stringy fucking hair. Weird looking dude at the end there, but you know they got him. They got him. It works. His neighbor in Denver. The woman that introduced him to his wife, right?
Yes.
Jesus.
Yeah.
What do you think is, what if he's watching TV with his wife that night? Put me in that room. If List is watching TV, and his wife's going, wait a, hold on a second.
Would you actually want to be a fly on the wall in that room?
I would. I totally would. To be one, or to be anyone who's profiled on America's Most Wanted, and then realize that they're on, that they made the show. Right? Like, how scary. How, first of all, I'd be like, oh, okay, I'm, that's a level of criminality. Yeah, it's a pretty high level of criminality. Like, you've arrived, you've made it, but then you've got to go like deep underground, right? And wonder who's going to give you up.
So he had lived in Denver, and then recently they had moved to Virginia. So that's where he was, and he'd gotten a job as an accountant. Surprise, surprise.
Another accountant.
And his new wife was like, he didn't do it. This isn't the husband that I know. I mean, can you imagine from her perspective, like, what that would be like?
Yep.
You know, knowing that he'd been living this lie, this horrible, horrible secret, and he's your partner. I mean, gosh, I mean, that you'd almost have to
do that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, these are hard ones, because it's like, the annihilation of a family, you know, it kind of just takes your breath away. It's so awful.
But and then but think after that, I mean, it gets into, it's like Dostoevskian, right? Did you ever read Crime and Punishment with Raskolnikov? Like, what's worse?
So long ago. Mm-hmm.
Is worse committing murder or getting away with it, right? Like, is he haunted by, these are his kids that he raised, four kids.
Well, that's why for me, the religion part is not so much like, I want to damn like you do. That's not what appeals to me about thinking about and talking about this story. Mm. What appeals to me about it is the idea, or as a thought experiment, like, that he actually believed it, that he could do this to his children and think that it was okay.
Right.
You know, and what it takes to get into that mindset, and what manipulations and lies you have to tell yourself. And if he actually believed it, or if it was just like, this is what I'm going to say, you know, because I got to say something.
See, no, that's really interesting. And there, I don't think there's a hard and fast answer for it. I don't have an opinion on it. You know, I can make an argument either way. but what just popped into my head, the great, late, great Christopher Hitchens, he was this, you know, great atheist and religion hater, and he wrote great books, and he was so well-read and so well-spoken, and I've watched so many of his lectures and his debates. And one of the things that he always goes back to, and I forget who the quote was, but he would always quote this person, that he would say, good people will do the best that they can. Bad people will do the worst that they can. But to get a good person to do a wicked thing requires religion. And so,
well, I would say it just requires somebody who can really manipulate. And usually it is cult leaders or religious groups that go way out of bounds and way out of, you know.
Right, but to really parse that quote, I think what he's talking about is, you need a religion that boasts revealed truth. Okay, from a supernatural being, so you can't really question it. Like, oh, these are the rules, so they have to be true. And that allows a framework for you to be forgiven, no matter what it is.
Absolutely. Okay?
I mean, doing is righteous. Look at the Crusades, for example, or the Inquisition, for example, like all of these things where otherwise normally cool people and good people wouldn't think about murdering someone. Be like, oh, they get caught up in this. Oh, well, I have to, God wants this to happen. And it's okay if I do it because it's righteous and I will be forgiven and I'll still get in the kingdom of heaven and I'll get my eternal reward. Right. So for this guy to look at his four beautiful children and his loving wife and his mother that raised him to say, the best thing that could happen to them, the best thing right now is for me to put a fucking bullet in each one of their heads, because that guarantees that they'll get into heaven. And then I will confess and I'll ask for forgiveness and then I'll see him later. And what, they'll apologize over what, like a bucket of popcorn up in heaven? Say, hey, remember that time I shot you in the face? I'm really sorry, but it was the best thing at the time.
I was doing it for you. I was
doing it because I love you.
Right. And I think that, you know, there's again, it comes down to human nature, a really charismatic leader, that framework that's required, like the Hail Bot people, you know, I mean, Heaven's that Gate. Became their religion, that Heaven's Gate. I mean, that when I remember that so clearly, because it was so like, what? You know, remember all their clothes like neatly folded and piled up with their shoes on top, and they were in some weird bunker, and then it showed
they weren't in a weird bunker. They were in a palatial estate outside of San Diego, and they were all dressed in all black, and they had on black Nike Decades. They all had the same shoes on.
That's right. But and weren't they in bunk beds or something?
All in bunk beds, like a military like kind of cots.
Yes.
And then the beer leader covered all of their faces with a cloth, and then went, and then he drank his Kool-Aid, and then they were all gone, like 40 fucking people.
Because, right, and here's the problem, not to cut you off, but I'm sorry, that John Liss didn't get his due. You know, he should have drank his Kool-Aid, but here was his get out of jail free card.
Because he still had some living to do, right?
Oh, I'm just saying.
Why not eat that last bullet, right? Eat that last bullet and go join him now. No, because suicide means that you go to hell and he's not going to see his family.
Right, and that's what he could tell himself in order to save himself.
Right. So I'll change my identity. I'll get a new thing. I'll move to Colorado and I'll meet a woman. I'll get married and have a great time. I'll have a good additional 18 years. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then when he's in prison, that's what Frank, when he was in prison, you know, Ken Lanning, and he was trying to get it overturned so many times. He was trying to get that confession letter thrown out. And it's like, he wanted the spotlight. This is why I'm not guilty. This is why I shouldn't, you know what I mean? Like, he still is getting that attention and still living that life, because why wouldn't he just take his lumps? Like, dude, you've done it. Like, what? Just, it's done. But he still wanted that attention. I mean, is there any way that he's possibly getting out? No. Why keep going through that whole thing?
I know. See, the problem with not being a believer is that I feel like that this guy just got away with it, you know?
He did.
Just got away with it. He had to live in a box for several years, the end of his life. But he didn't get shot in the back of the head. And I hope he had nightmares of his kids every single night, you know.
See, that's the thing. He got to live for 18 more years on the outside. He got away with it, right?
Yep.
He got away with it in prison because in his mind, I'm still going to heaven.
Yep.
And so he got away with it. And that's the part, because
and he got free medical, free dental, and free cable also for the rest of his life when he was in jail.
I mean, and he could sit there and do his spreadsheets, you know, and that would be like, you know, great. I can control myself. I can control everything in here, you know. So I'm glad glad that he was caught. Glad that there was some resolution. But
maybe some bad shit happened to him in prison that we don't know about. Let's hope. That's what I hope.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he like Andy Dufresne that shit and became like the accountant for like the warden. You know?
Oh, why did you have to break? That totally happened, right?
Can I bet it did. I bet it totally fucking happened.
Oh, I believe it. Like, hey, the old man's going to help me out with my taxes. I mean, yeah.
Oh, Christ. Well, anyway, I said, you started off Criminal Mischief with a banger. Well done. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Welcome to... The Criminal Mischief. This is the first of what we hope to be a really long and fruitful and wonderful show filled with stirring and intriguing content. Makes you think, makes you laugh, and makes you keep coming back. So please consider supporting the great companies that support our show. We couldn't be doing this without them. Hop on over to Apple and rate us, review us, share with your friends. It helps more than you know. Carolyn, great job. Anything you'd like to add?
I'm Carolyn Osorio with Brandon Morgan, and we will see you next time.
Thanks, everybody.
From Cloud 10, Criminal Mischief is a pie in the sky production recorded in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. We're produced by Brandon Morgan and myself, music by Soundstripe. I'm Carolyn Osorio, your writer and host.
Hello, the world. Where They Will Kill, a true crime podcast. I'm Courtney Eck.
And I'm Sadie Eck. And we are sisters that want to tell you about lesser-known murders.
Our cases are always compelling, maybe even a little scary, with just enough banter to keep it interesting.
You can find us at theywillkill.com.
Or anywhere you listen to podcasts. See you there.
See ya.